Well, it wasn't exactly 12 drummers drumming as we get to the 12th day of Christmas, but Colin Curry makes it sound like there's 12 of them there with all that percussion going on. Just a crazy great piece. Love that work by Michael Torkey. Two movements, drums and woods and metals from his percussion concerto, Rapture.
12 drummers drumming.
I know, right?
You know, it's like the... I was just thinking about that song this morning because it. One of the fun things about that song is it changes meter constantly. So it's like one, two, three, four calling birds, three French hens. That's in three. But then on the first day of Christmas, one, two, three, four. So it like switches back and forth between four, four, and three, four time, which I think is kind of cool. But I'm always, you know, it's always a little bit hard to know whether the drummers or the pipers come first. Do you have a way of remembering that?
Just by telling myself that it has to end with drummers drumming.
Really? Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you get to the 12th day. I mean, pipers piping is totally cool too, but that just seems like...
And it just seems right.
It just seems right to have the 11 pipers. So you've got your 10 lords a-leaping.
See, now this, it took me a long time to figure out. I used to like think, I'm like, why? I would get confused to the last three. Mm-hmm. But of course, and then it occurred to me that the lords a-leaping have to immediately follow the ladies dancing.
The nine ladies dancing.
Yeah, so it's nine ladies dancing. And that, because I always thought of the ladies dancing with the maids a-milking, like being coupled, right? But then it's like, oh, well, yeah, then you have lords, ladies, and maids. So that helped. That solved some problems. But we are just trying to get this stuff out of our heads, though. I mean, the Christmas music is out of control. I mean, and in my house is not just Christmas songs. It's like every song from White Christmas. So everybody's walking around the house singing like Sisters, Sisters, There Were Never Such Devoted Sisters, as if that's a Christmas song, too. So we have many playlists to purge on this 12th day of Christmas.
Well, do you have all your Christmas decorations down?
No, actually, not yet. That will come this weekend. We usually keep them up.
Yeah, see, we did too. My mother was always kept everything up through. 12 days
of Christmas,
of course, and then everything came down on Epiphany.
Yeah,
that was just how I grew up. That's how we observed it. But I actually read something that if you leave your Christmas decorations up, according to superstition, past 12th night,
yeah.
Then bad luck.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Well, all I know is that, like, we are holdouts, but these things are flammable. I mean, you look at, we've got this, like, we've got a wreath on the table, you know, and we light the wreath every night, and it's great. Yeah. But, like, the wax is dripping down, and so the flame gets closer to it, and I'm just like, this thing's going to burst into flames. So I think there's something to this about not leaving it up past the 12th night, because...
See, I always thought it had to do with, like, fruitcake or something.
Yeah.
You were supposed to eat the last of your fruitcake, too, on that particular day. Whatever, I guess, was still edible by the 12th day of Christmas.
Well, and that presumes that it was edible at all, you know? And,
You and I are of a like mind.
Exactly, right, exactly. Fruitcake,
yeah.
I could be convinced. Oh, no, is that right?
Yeah,
oh, someone's triggered
he
over
likes
there.
It, yeah.
Oh,
he
that's good. Well, that's right. That's it. When you like something no one else likes, it's great because then you get all of it. You know?
And the best of
yes,
it.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, 12 days of Christmas and looking here to the end of the holidays, you're still on break, which is nice.
It is nice.
Time
it's
to
nice.
Take
we,
that.
We cleaned out the attic. Yeah.
Needed break.
Yeah.
Get a chance to sort of decompress a little bit and think about other things beyond writing music. Or have you been writing music during this time?
Some writing music, okay. But mostly planning, actually. There's just a planning for composing and planning for teaching because squeezing in between things is kind of tricky. What's sort of fun is we have our last phase of home renovations going on.
Ooh.
And I'll have a nice sort of separate studio once this is finished. So that will help with the composing. But what is also brewing in my head, of course, is teaching. I get to teach the second semester of music theory this spring, which I love teaching. It's like all the dumb little rules about, you know, the soprano can't go there unless the bass goes there and like all this. I love the topic. I think I find it fascinating. And those poor students, they'll just, you know. But I'm taking a little different approach. This is the nice thing about, you know, the break time is going back through. And I haven't taught this course for a few years. And I'm ready to just, you know, mix it up
quite
a bit.
Dive back in again.
Dive back in with like newfound approaches. So we'll see. Those poor guinea pig students.
I've heard that your classes are very popular and that people sign up like immediately. Like, okay, you're going to have to wait. Take another class by sure, Dr. Banks.
Sure. It's like, oh yeah, easy A, Dr. Banks. No, what they do this what they do is they distract me. These students in my classes, they learn very early on.
They figured
bring
that
up
out.
Camping. I kills 15 minutes of class. Bring up like buying pork and beef direct from farmers. It will kill 30 minutes of class time with me. I'm just like, "Oh yeah, well you know, I was just talking with the Amish guy and he's helping me out with the pig." They learn this stuff. This is why they call me Bestie Banks, because I just end up killing the whole. That's why I'm very easily distractible. So,
I love it.
So this is why if they're clamoring to sign up, that could be the only explanation.
Well, I was actually thinking if I were to take a theory class again, I would love to take your class, because that was just something that I never found very fun as a young student.
Yeah.
And something that I think now it's definitely one of those things where you look back and you go, that really was valuable. Mm-hmm. I wish I had paid closer attention at the time or had somebody that wasn't, you know, maybe just so strictly academic that could have had fun with it for me as a student. I mean, that very academic approach does work well with others, but it didn't work that well with me in that sense. I found it really dull and my mind would wander. Just like in algebra class. And it was just so hard to stay focused on it. And it, you know, it has turned out to be something that was very important and very necessary.
Yeah. I mean, like, well,
of my job.
Clearly you've done fine. I mean, that's the good thing is like, I don't know what your grades were in theory, but it's like, well, you know, you've done pretty well for yourself. So, you know, and I think this is one of the issues. I, as a student, always struggled with why. Tell me why I'm doing this.
Yes.
And so
yes.
I really am very much focused on my, because music theory is one where there are so many systems, and for the right kind of personality, that the systems as systems are fascinating. And if you have the right brain, then you can just really go down the rabbit hole and just like just glory in the system and thinking about the system. But like, that's not most even really good musicians. You know, I mean, that's just a odd person like me. I'm like that. You know, I just love that. And those are the people who often end up teaching music theory. And so I think what's important is to make sure we understand why we're learning it, aside from, oh, it's fascinating. Like, because it's not fascinating to everybody, mm-hmm. but it is valuable to every musician. And so the approach that I take with this, especially with first year theory, is I to put it most bluntly, I'm training them as composers. It seems a little like weird, you know, but it's not like I'm training them to. It's not in creative expression. It's just in the because, you know, everybody, musicians used to compose. Like, they all composed. It was all part of working. And so I'm teaching, it's like writing. It's like teaching college writing. You know, it isn't even so much a matter of like you want to have them produce symphonies or something, but the process of actually having to generate something musical gives you a completely different perspective on everything that you are singing or playing that is also generated. And so for them to sort of like have to be trained a little bit in the habits of what it takes to produce music that works, that's a lot better why, right? Because mm-hmm. A, it's not just a matter of like, oh, well, interesting that Bach did this like super consistently. I mean, if your music theory class is just basically a lesson in how like great composers are very consistent, then it's like, I believe you that they're consistent. We don't need to talk about that. But like, how being steeped in certain habits and practices as a musician make you a better musician. So that's the why. That's what we start with. And then if I don't get too distracted during class, we actually end up accomplishing something.
So how exciting was this then for your students as you were actually writing a piece of music that was going to be used at the installation of Augustana's ninth president, Andrea Tolentino?
Yes.
So how was that for students to sort of, were they allowed to sort of be part of the process as you were kind of working through this piece?
Yeah, no, I was very grateful to have my students, to be able to show things to my students as I was working on it. Also, many of my students are in Augustana Symphonic Band. My composition students I'm speaking of specifically. So it was kind of fun for them to kind of see to be actual performers of the pieces as well as seeing me sort of go through the process of composition. But it was a huge honor. I mean, I am a very strong believer. Benjamin Britten is one of my musical heroes, and he has a really great speech he gave in Colorado, of all places, back in the 60s when he got this award. And one of the things he talks about is that basically composers should have a place in society. And so I'm the kind of composer who just absolutely, and I totally agree with him. And so I'm like through the roof when the idea comes like to compose a piece for this occasion. Because I didn't want to necessarily, you know, write a piece that was like so completely tied to the occasion that it couldn't have any other application.
Yes.
But
yes.
For a composer to be a participant in an important event, I think is very good for the event and very good for composers. So it's right up my alley. And it was a good opportunity to demonstrate to my students that, you know, the ivory tower is wonderful, but composers actually can make a contribution to society. So,
well, it's a fascinating piece. The title and piece is actually...
Oh, yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Play on words. Yep. I see what you did there, Mindy.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that happened to me a million times, actually, when you say... Because the name is A Fragile Piece, and it's like, oh, well, are the flutes going to break? Like, what... what's going on? Yes. But P-E-A-C-E. In print, it looks better. So.
Well, it was, you know, reading... her inaugural speech, she talks a lot about the transformational process that happens at higher institutions of learning.
Yeah.
And really, there is a transformational process that occurs, I think, through all of our educational systems. Wherever we start, whatever we learn, it isn't just an absorption process. Right. There is true transformation that is behind all of that. We hope, yes. Yeah. And clearly that is something of value when you are looking to invest in education at a school like Augustana or St. Ambrose, you know, if you're going on past your high school education.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, okay, I bet he's going to write a piece about transformation. No. So were you allowed to pick something from her bio that was like, okay, that's what I think I will write the piece of music about? Or was she part of the process? Or how did all of this come to be? Because I love the idea of a fragile piece, and we can talk about the music itself, because it's beautifully interwoven throughout this work of what you're talking about. I mean, there is a very crystalline kind of sound that does make you think at any moment what's happening could just shatter if we're not careful.
Absolutely.
With it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So President Tolentino, who I'm so thrilled to welcome to Augustana. She's
ninth
president, extremely accomplished, super cool. Totally. From my point of view, is a great leader, totally understands how the institution is structured and sort of what belongs to the executive, what belongs to the faculty, what belongs to the board of trustees. I'm very, very pleased to see her leadership, you know, her season of leadership begin, because she's very cool, very good at her job. But yeah, she was involved in the process. I had floated the idea sort of to folks that, you know, I'd be willing to do something that I think, I don't know if this was before or after Andrea was announced, but we then sort of, she reached out and said, hey, you know, I heard that this was interesting and, you know, that you were interested in this and that would be great. So let's do it. So, you know, she was a good sport in that, you know, she didn't, a lot of people understand that like composers sort of work in their own way. And so they don't need to be told what to do. Right. And so she never really told me what to do. But again, as I told you, my goal is to, I told her this too. I'm like, you know, I know that it's not like the coolest thing to say about your music, that it's appropriate. You know what I mean? Like people's music is like, you know, you want, what's his music like? Oh, well, it's, you know, it's bold, or it's innovative, or it's thrilling. You know, it's like, well, Actually, one of the things I really want my music to be is appropriate, you know, like in that it's like suitable to the context in, for which it is written. It's a weird thing, but she laughed, I think. And we had, you know, I said, I'm like, my goal is to make it appropriate. And so as I decide what I'm going to compose, I'll sort of be in touch with you. Well, she is a scholar, a very accomplished political scientist. And so I did as best I could. You know, it's funny how cross-disciplinary deep dives are not always easy, right? You know, it's
right.
Like I have a PhD and she has a PhD, but I don't understand this field at all. Perhaps she'd have the same reaction to a, you know, journal article in music theory, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just the way academia is now. But her academic writing, the stuff that I came across, was quite accessible, I found. And I had the, of course, added benefit of having sort of gone through a bunch of it, came up with a bunch of questions, and then she very graciously, we had a, you know, quick phone call. And I said, you know, I had a few questions about peace because as a political scientist, she studies peace, like international peacekeeping and such, particularly the actions, interventions of large
struggles. Organizations.
Exactly. Yep. But like UN actions, right? Like, sure. So where there is, you know, like the Balkans, for example, is a place she's looked at a lot. Sierra Leone is another one, where like what has gone well, what has not gone well in terms of trying to build peace in places where there was war. So she gave me a very good, quick rundown. She said, you know, if you start to fall asleep, you know, to stop me. You know, she didn't pretend like it was something that somebody was going to pick up right away. But from that, I got a really good sense of what it was that was important to her as a scholar. And it helped put into context the reading I had done of her own work. So one of the things that really struck me was just that peace is fragile, especially in places that have been sort of viciously war-torn, that it does require a lot of... it requires many, many conditions, both within and beyond people's control, immediate control, in order to preserve. And people can do it, you know, they can be successful or not. And it doesn't depend on the intentions of the people. You know, no one's questioning whether people intend to build peace, but just that it's a difficult thing to build and preserve. And so that was my starting point for the piece. You know, the piece starts with this like big tinkly gesture. I think a family member, extended family member of President Tolentino, I think I heard dubbed her the fairy princess of peace or something like that because of the flourishing, you know, the magical flourishing. But really, what a lot of that also had to do was when I think about Augustana. Especially the time of year that the inauguration was going to happen, you know, October. This campus is one of the most glorious and most peaceful places. I mean, you just walk through campus, you walk on the slough path. A lot of Quad Cities people don't know this, actually. You could be like a lifelong Quad Cities resident and like resident and regularly drive down 7th Avenue and not realize that like immediately south of 7th Avenue is just one of those like most gorgeous park-like areas in the whole Quad Cities. But it does feel very fragile as well. You know, there's always a sense that, you know, you never know. And of course, we're in higher education, which is a field that is in flux right now. It is a very difficult time. And there's obviously major shifts going on in how higher education works. And so there's just a sense of fragility. You know, I don't get the sense of like a weighty institution that is immune from the kind of vagaries, you know, as opposed to like, for example, one place I also wrote a piece about, which was the Naval Academy in Annapolis, Maryland, of all places. And that was a very different music that place described. It was a different kind of piece. It was a kind of like quiet strength, you know, very settled. Whereas like Augustana, and you know, Augustana is a wonderful place, and I think as institutions go, very stable. But there is just a sense that the peace we have to consciously work to retain. It's not sort of a given, and I think that is what I gained. That is also the case, is a viewpoint that I gained from President Tarantino's academic work. So,
well, I'd like to play just those few opening bars like you were talking about, so listeners can kind of get a sense of that kind of crystalline sound that you gave to it that really highlights, I think, the idea of the fragility of peace in that. At least that's what I got out of it when I listened to it. I loved it.
And in terms of fragility, I just have to say this. We were very gracious. Jim Lambrecht, my dear colleague who conducted the premiere, he was very gracious to allow us to use this recording. I just have to, legal wants me to say that this was outside. The mic placement was not like a recording studio or a concert hall. And so there, you know, the recording isn't necessarily mixed right. And it was about 55 degrees. So
it was a little chilly. Right.
So just keep that in mind when you hear the recording. It's not a studio recording, but I'm very proud of how the students performed. So
yes, here,
take it away.
And it was the Augustana Symphonic Band under the direction of Dr. James Lambrecht. Find that fascinating. I love that work, Jacob.
Thank you.
And again, I think the Augustana Symphonic Band did a remarkable job playing outside.
I am proud of them.
In chilly
I really
weather
am.
With Dr. James Lambrecht conducting. And
it was funny because we have a new hire in our teaching clarinet for us, Elizabeth Matera, who she's a native of the region, but she spent 15 or so years in the President's Own Marine Band, which played the presidential inauguration in January outside forever. So any complaints from the students about, you know, like, oh, I'm outside and my instrument is like no sympathy there whatsoever.
Sorry.
And again, mic placement is an issue too. I mean, because, you know, and again, we can complain, you know, we're all audiophiles, so we can complain about that. But the way it sounded kind of in person, which was pretty cool, was that initial sound. You know, the clarinets are very much at the forefront in that, but really they lived more inside that big tinkly sound. It was almost like someone had the pedal down on the piano, you know, in the quad, and it sort of let the sound ring. But yeah, I'm very, very, very proud of the students. They put it together really quickly too. It was right after a concert that they had, and the whole central section is, we were talking about the 12 Days of Christmas being in 3, except when it's not, except when it's in 4. Well, the whole central section is all in 5. Da 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 da. 1 2 3 4 5. 1 2 3 4 5. And boy, that's a challenge actually, because when music is, and in fact, that was very consciously chosen. to relate to the theme, because that's what's called asymmetrical meter. So sometimes there will be things in 5/4, which is like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and that just means that there's 5 beats in the bar. But this is in 5/8. I don't want to get too technical here, but it relates to the theme, I promise. So this is actually, there's actually 2 beats per bar, one part that has 2 parts and another one that has 3 parts. So 1 and 2 and a 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 for the whole time. And that, I really intended, I chose that meter to sort of show the like imbalance that you feel, the kind of unease with peace, like trying to preserve peace. It's never like feels totally settled and balanced. And that, you know, again, usually when you're playing music, even in the 12 Days of Christmas, even if the number of beats per bar changes, the beats are all the same length. But this meter, 5/8, this asymmetrical meter, has a short beat and a long beat in constant oscillation. And it's very tricky. It's tricky to play, but that unease is sort of part of the expressive nature of the piece.
Absolutely. The piece is always not only fragile, but in flux too.
Yes, no doubt.
You know, constantly. No doubt. Yeah. Well, I thought it was a great piece.
Thank you so much. I was so honored to be included in such a great event.
Well, it's so cool to hear how something comes together like that. And I was really looking forward to talking to you about this. As always, you and I could probably go on for an hour.
Forget Marketplace.
That's right. Who cares, right?
It's music. Not good news anyway.
Yeah, I think it last call it.
Right, exactly. Anyway, whatever, yeah.
Yep, Marketplace is coming up. So, Jacob, thanks again for another great edition. Music 101, I'll see you in February.
Oh, yeah. QCSO, more to come. They're rocking it this year. Oh, unbelievable.
They are killing it. Yeah. Yes. Well, Marketplace is next. I'm Mindy Heisel. Thank you for joining me here at Music on Perspective.